Good morning. It's 10:06. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The new year brings some new rules for credit card companies. How will they affect you? How will the new rules affect credit card companies? What are card companies doing in response to the new regulations? Well, those are just a few of the questions we'll try to get answers for this hour. And to help us in our quest for information and clarity, we have an expert, as is our habit on Wisconsin Public Radio. Angela K. Litwin is assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin School of Law and a nationally recognized expert on banking law. Good morning, Professor Litwin, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Well, let's start out with some of the basics here. How are the changes in the Credit Card Accountability, Responsibility, and Disclosure Act of 2009, how is this law different from regulations already imposed by banking regulators?
It's extremely different. So there were a set of regulations that the Federal Reserve enacted last June, but they haven't gone into effect yet. And so the law adds a number of changes even to those regulations, but because consumers have not seen those regulations, they're not going to go into effect until July. Everything will seem new. So the changes change from the credit card issuers have to give you notice and a right to cancel whenever they change your terms. You have to be able to opt in to charge over your credit limit, and therefore for them to charge you credit over limit fees after that. They can only raise your interest rate in the first year under limited circumstances. It requires them to allocate your payments, and whenever you pay something beyond the minimum payment, it requires them to allocate it to the part of your account that has the highest interest rate rather than the lowest interest rate. So, and then there's new rules for people under the age of 21 as well. So there's a huge number of things that are going into effect, and consumers should see a real difference because many of the changes have been enacted into regulation, but they hadn't gone into effect yet.
What's the most important in terms of a consumer benefit from these new regulations?
It's hard to say. I think a lot of it will depend on what situation you are in as a consumer. I think certainly the right to cancel when your credit card company changes your terms would seem to be really, really important to consumers, but we don't know how it will play out in terms of whether consumers will actually take advantage of it, whether the notices that the issuers send out will be intelligible to consumers, whether there's some reports now that issuers are trying to send messages about rate increases in mail that looks like junk mail, so that people will be more inclined to throw it out. So some of the rules that seem really important may not have as much of an effect as we would like to see. Some of the rules that will have the most noticeable effect will be the rules about under 21, people from under 21. It protects people between the ages of 18 20, and 21 can no longer get a credit card at all unless they either have a parental cosigner or can demonstrate their ability to pay the balance. It also bans the free gift inducements on college campuses that become a regular feature of college life. So that, I think, will be some of the most obvious changes and some of the things will be hardest to get around. Some of the others are really important, but it's going to require consumers to be on top of things and to understand their new rights in order to take advantage of them.
Well, I mean, that's an important point to make, is that we're still in a situation of let the buyer beware. If you're going to apply for credit, then you have to be responsible to make sure that you understand what agreement you're signing.
Right. And the new laws do require issuers to make certain disclosures more understandable. I mean, as credit card contracts are currently written, your average consumer has very little chance of understanding them. I mean, I have friends who are lawyers who have looked up clauses in their contract trying to figure out what they mean and haven't been able to figure it out until it was too late. So the law requires some simplification and some additional types of disclosures. But credit card contracts will still be hard to read, and people will still be bound by them. One of the most important things they're changing in disclosures is that the there's now going to be disclosure that requires the company to state what your eventual balance will be if you make the minimum payment, and give you the thing over a certain number of conditions, and put it very near the place where your bill amount is stated. And that's the kind of disclosure that actually will really help consumers, because it makes it more salient. It gives consumers actual information about their own situation, which is the type of information that makes it easier for people to make good decisions.
Well, I'm glad to hear that even attorneys have trouble understanding this gobbledygook, because I just recently got about a six page notice from a credit card company. It was in about a, it looked like about a 6-point font, and I gave up after about the third paragraph, and I said, well, I'm making my payments, and I'm not really using the card very much, and so I'm not going to worry about this right now. And that was probably a mistake on my part, but I was getting a headache and reaching for the magnifying glass.
Right, and you're probably better equipped than many people to be able to do this.
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, I actually did spend a year in pre-law as an undergraduate, so I don't know. But.
Right. It's just the language is intentionally obscure. I mean, the idea behind the new bill, and I don't think it fully accomplishes this yet, and we'll talk about, I assume at some point, what might be able to better accomplish that, but the idea is to give people a better awareness of what they're actually paying, because I think with many, the way that credit card fees end up playing out is that the way they make their money is by roping people into fees that they would never agree to if they had a full understanding of what the fee would be at the time that they were incurring it. And so the idea is to make the fees more transparent by front-loading them and making people feel the pain of them earlier on, so that it's not buried in some clause somewhere and then you don't find it out months later until it's too late.
And some credit card companies, and I'm not going to name who they are, have done a very good job of, at least in my case, of letting me know what interest rate I'm paying on which type of transaction. For example, there's generally a difference between a cash withdrawal, the interest you would pay on a cash withdrawal, as opposed to certain kinds of purchases. And then there are even differences between types of purchases, and you can pay different interest rates on each one. And there was one company that I dealt with at one time that I thought made it. My statement was pretty clear what I was paying on each kind of transaction. And so since the fees on cash withdrawals were much higher than my regular credit card rate, I just never used the card that way. But if I hadn't known it until after the fact, I might have gotten burned.
Right, right. And many people don't know it until after the fact. And the other thing that's really important, and this is actually something that will change, is that so you were able to take action ahead of time by not charging, by not taking cash advances. But choosing between the variable interest rates, if you do have some parts of your balance that are a lower rate and some parts of the balance that are a higher rate, and you made payments, everything above the minimum payment would be applied to the thing with the lowest balance rate first. So if you had, part of your balance was in a 0% teaser rate and the other part of your balance was, say, at 20%, everything you paid off beyond the minimum would be applied to your zero balance payment rate rather than to the things that are accruing interest at 20%. So even if you knew about those things, there was some ways you could have controlled from up front, as you did, not taking the cash advance. But other types of interest differentiation, you would have no ability to control to pay the higher rate off first, or even simultaneously with the lower rate balance. And that's something that actually will change.
Well, one of the things I wanted to get to here, and you alluded to it just a moment ago and said, you hoped we would get to it. Well, let's get to it now. Does the bill that was just passed go far enough in terms of consumer protection?
I would say no. The real problem is that credit card issuers are incredibly smart and sophisticated. They have amazing computer programs at their disposal, and we're already seeing them try to find ways around the current laws. And the history of consumer credit regulation of the last, say, 30 years has been one where a law goes into effect, and then creditors find ways to change their contracts so that the laws don't apply to them. So, for example, there was a subprime mortgage law that was in the early 1980s, but it had very limited coverage of what counted as a subprime loan. They didn't call them subprime then. But so all mortgage issuers were able to change their mortgages so that they did not meet the law and therefore were not subject to regulation. And we're already starting to see that with credit card issues reacting to the current law. What needs to happen is you need to have a regulatory body that's actively invested in keeping up with the issuers and in really keeping up with the best with the practices of the industry and changing things as they come on the ground. Congress just cannot move fast enough to keep up with what credit card issuer is going to come out with. So that's why it's extremely important that we pass the Consumer Financial Protection Agency bill that Obama passed and proposed a while ago and that the House passed in December, but that the Senate hasn't moved on yet. And having a regulator in place whose main goal is consumer protection will allow the government to keep up better with what the credit card companies are doing.
We're talking about new credit card laws that are coming into effect here in 2010 and wondering what you might think about it. Are you somebody who has credit cards? Do you think these new regulations are going to help you better understand your credit card bills and the agreements that you have with credit card companies? Do you have questions about how this law might affect you? Well, we have an expert here to answer those questions as best she can this morning, and we invite you to join us here on the Ideas Network by calling our toll-free number, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email. The address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. My guest is Angela Litwin, assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin School of Law and a nationally recognized expert in banking law. She's with us for the remainder of this hour to answer your questions as well as mine. So, 800-642-1234, talk@wpr.org. We'll be back. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have some phone calls and perhaps some emails as well. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Kathleen, we'll be back tomorrow. Here's what's coming up later on here on the Ideas Network. After 3 on Here on Earth, Gene Faraca's guest makes the case that the mind of the elephant shows similarities to our own. She uses research from neuroscience, psychology, and animal behavior. That's on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. 3 o'clock this afternoon here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about credit card regulations. New laws are going into effect now in 2010 that change the way credit card companies have to operate. And we're wondering how those laws are going to affect not just us, but the credit card companies themselves. My guest is Angela K. Litwin, assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin School of Law, nationally recognized expert on banking law. She's with me by phone, and we have a number of other people who are joining us by phone as well. Before we go to the phones, Professor, I wanted to ask you if you we were talking before the break about what the credit card companies are about what the credit card companies are doing in response to the new regulations. You were talking about how they're already making changes to adjust. There are new fees that are going into effect. For example, many credit card companies are now going to charge a fee if you don't use your card, and so forth. And I also read a news story over the weekend. There's a credit card issuer in South Dakota who is going to be issuing a high-risk credit card with a 79.9% interest rate. I thought that was pretty incredible. Evidently, we've made is the term the VIG going to start being used with credit cards now? And if you don't pay, is someone in an ill-fitting pinstripe suit going to show up at your door with a baseball bat?
No, I think that's unlikely, but they will call you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as they already do, is more likely what we're going to continue seeing. But yes, the credit card industry is raising fees like crazy, because they, the bill itself limits their ability to raise fees on you, once the bill goes into effect in February. And so they've had several months to prepare for the changes because the law was passed in May. And one of the things they've done is just about every major issuer has increased people's interest rate. The 79% one that you're referring to, yeah, that got a lot of press recently and understandably, is that that's something that actually will change in the current law. That 79.9% will actually be banned because that's a certain kind of subprime card that where the amount of fees they charge you up front is too large a part of your credit limit. So, for example, they might only give you a credit limit of $500 and then charge you $250 worth of fees on that limit. And the new law does actually limit the amount they can charge up to 25% of the credit limit. So if they give you a $500 credit limit, they'd only be able to charge you $125 in upfront fees. So that actually is something that will be changed by the new law. But the other thing is that when you see something like the 79.9% interest rate, one of my colleagues on the blog where I write, creditslips.org, Adam Levinson, points out that it's actually cheaper than one of the earlier cards by this company. It's just that now that the bill forces companies to put more things up front, consumers can actually see the real price of something before they decide to purchase and get themselves into the agreement.
Well, that's really one of the chief benefits of the new regulations, the ability to know what you're to have a better idea of what you're getting into.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that is the main idea. You know, people have been saying, you keep mentioning how issuers are going to adjust to this. One of the things that's likely to happen is there's going to be more annual fees. But I actually think that's a good thing. Consumers don't like annual fees, and that's because they force consumers to internalize the pain of a credit card ahead of time. But if consumers aren't willing to pay that $30 a year up front, then that's not a card they should be using, because if they weren't paying it up front, they were going to pay it on the back end anyway. And so it just puts more of the fees up front and allows people to make better decisions about how much they're actually willing to spend on credit.
Well, that reminds me of that old oil filter commercial, you can pay me now or you can pay me later, but either
exactly.
way you're going to pay. Yeah. Let's take a call from Scott in Sparta. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. I'm one of those people who has a free card that gives me cash back, and I have it set up so that I pay my balance off with a direct money transfer from bank account every month. Mm-hmm. So essentially, I've been making out pretty well on this deal. I use my credit cards for as much as I can because, as they say, I get cash back on them. I was interested to hear the category of folks like me referred to as deadbeats because they're not carrying a balance. And I guess my question for you today is, how likely are the credit cards to pull the plug on the kind of deal that I'm taking advantage of? And would they do that even figuring that what I would do if I suddenly I mean, because I'm going to have a credit card at some point anyway, if it's only to do things like rent cars and book airline travel. And I would ditch my current, if they did this and started providing, charging me an annual fee, I would ditch my credit cards with them and go over to a credit union where those fees are regulated to more, and just use my card on a more limited basis. So I guess my question is it worth it to them, considering the amount that I'm charging and putting into the into their coffers through their fees on vendors? Is it worth it to lose the business of people like me, the deadbeats?
The deadbeats, yes. We all love that phrase. It's unclear. There's actually a big debate among, those of us nerds who study these things about how much money credit card issuers are making off of people like you. It used to be the case that what they were doing was cross-subsidizing, which was that the people who were paying late and who were revolving a balance regularly, that some of the money that credit card issuers were making off of people like you was being used to, off of them, was being used to subsidize your frequent flyer miles. That actually, the latest thinking is that that is no longer true, that companies have gotten good enough at segmenting the market and at figuring out who is likely to pay what in advance, that they would not keep giving you your card now if they were not making a profit off of you individually. They would have canceled your card by now, or they would have imposed some additional fee. And so the laws going into effect mainly are going to affect people not in your situation, people who are revolving balances and racking up interest on their credit card bills. The credit card companies, my belief, and we'll see if this happens, is that they already would have cut you off if they really weren't making enough money from the merchant interchange fees, which you alluded to. So the main way they make money off of people who pay their balance every month is through payments they get from stores where you use your credit card. And so, again, my thinking is that, no, things will not change for you very much. They may change a little bit because they would have already made those changes. This shouldn't actually affect how they're billing you.
Scott, thanks for that call. Lines are now available if you'd care to join us. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. The email is talk@wpr.org. One of the things that Scott brought up, and I wanted to be sure to talk about this a little bit too, and we also have a comment from another listener, is the differences between a card issued by, say, your local bank or your local credit union, as opposed to a card that you might just go out and get online from one of the major card issuers. What are the differences between those types of cards? Are there different rules? Or is the fact that your local credit union or your local bank has to see you in person, does that make them have treat you a little bit differently when it comes to things like interest rates and kind of some of the gotcha things that we see from some of the major credit card companies?
Yes, the credit unions are subject to different rules. There was a really interesting op-ed piece in the New York Times recently arguing that because credit unions already do many of the things that the new law is putting into place, that worst-case scenario for the credit card issuers is they'll be able to operate like credit unions. Because, many of the big credit card companies are saying, we're not going to make money, post the bill. And the argument is that no, credit unions already have a lot of these strictures rules into effect and do a lot of the better practices advocated by the bill or that are required by the law. As far as your local bank goes, the vast majority of credit cards are issued through the big eight now. The number's always changing, the big 10. The number's always reducing, actually, the number of large credit card companies. I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but I believe it's over 80% of credit cards are issued by the top eight issuers. So there just aren't that many local bank credit cards being put out. Credit cards have become sort of a business of scale. The data mining aspect of it, the ability to sort of follow analyze risk based on credit reports and, you know, pinpoint the exact riskiness of every customer that you have is something that's much better done by large companies. And so, yes, I think there are some small cards out there who do things a little bit differently, but they have a very small market share.
Well, Jim in Green Bay comments that in the 1990s, his credit card company was so punitive that he switched to a credit union, and that seemed to solve his problems. And that was, I think, some of what Scott was talking about. If his card company didn't do what he wanted, he was going to go switch. He was going to go switch to something else, and probably would go look to his local credit union. It still seems to me like if you're dealing with somebody in your own hometown and they have to look you in the eye and tell you, I'm going to charge you this fee, that it might make a little bit of a difference in how they behave.
No,
I
think
in terms
it will.
Of their local
I'm just
marketing.
Saying that there aren't most people's credit cards don't operate that way. The vast majority of
right.
people have their credit cards through the Wells Fargo or through the city or, through Cap One or any of the big national banks. But yeah, I mean, I think local banking does make a difference. And we've seen that a lot in the mortgage crisis, right? The people used to pay their mortgage to a local bank and they knew the banker and they could talk to them. And now in the current crisis, when mortgages have been sold a million different ways, people have trouble even contacting somebody at their mortgage holder to find. And yes, I mean, I think that having local service definitely makes a difference in that sense.
And you did a study of what families would like to see from credit card companies in terms of policies and practices. I mean, you actually talked to the people who use credit cards. What were mm-hmm. some of the things that you found first of all, what did you find that surprised you, and then what did you find that you expected to find?
So the most interesting thing I found that surprised me was how aware people were of being tricked and how active people were of trying to stop it. So I think it was about 2/3 of study participants described credit cards as a temptation, and many of them had gone to great lengths to avoid spending on impulse something that they didn't want to spend money on later on. So people were doing things like when they got the pre-approved offers in the mail of cutting them up instead of just putting them in the trash. Some people did that for identity theft reasons, but more people did that because that way they knew they wouldn't dig the thing out of the recycling bin later and fill it out. So people were actually really trying aggressively and proactively trying to control their own credit card spending, but the credit cards made that very difficult. So one of the proposals that I sort of generated out of this study was that over-limit fees shouldn't be automatic. So as it currently works, if your credit limit is, say, $2,000, and you charge, $2,500 worth of stuff, that your credit card company would let you charge that extra $500, but then will charge you a fee for doing so. One of the changes the new law makes, which I think is really extremely important and necessary, is that you will have to opt in to be able to charge over your $2,000 limit. That instead, when you went to go and charge that extra $500 worth of whatever you were buying, that your card would just be turned down. And that's the kind of thing that people told me they really wanted, is because they were trying to control their own credit card spending, but credit cards made it too easy on them, and they wanted more structures in place that would help them better resist short-term temptation.
Yeah, that is really the issue. I mean, there's all that advertising out there. Hey, you get this card, you can do this, you can do that. All these things are available to you. Well, yeah, if you pay for them.
Exactly.
But it makes it sound like, oh, you can do all this stuff, and it's all happy, happy, boing, boing, and there are no consequences, and don't, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. it's very subtle, and everybody else is doing it. Got to keep up with the Joneses here, and, all of a sudden, here we are. We've got a bunch of phone calls here, and I want to take those as soon as we can. But I want to just follow up on one other thing that you said earlier, and that was you know, that the credit card companies are looking for ways to replace the revenue that they're losing in because of the new regulations. And I just there was a news story about Discover Card. Their stock went down because they reported that they were already seeing a decrease. It was only like 1%, but it was a decrease in their income. And they were predicting that even more, they'd have even more trouble going forward because they wouldn't be able to collect as much money under the in the newly regulated field of play as opposed to the old way of doing business.
I mean, I hope that's right. I mean, my argument about this is that regulation is needed because very few people would actually pay the amount they're paying on their credit cards if they knew what they were getting into up front. So you should see some kind of decrease in revenue from the kinds of back-end charges that issuers have been able to charge now. We should see a decrease in that because I've maintained, and I think many other people in the field believe this, that people, the consumers, would just not choose to spend as much money on credit cards if they knew up front what they were going to end up paying in the long run. So credit card companies are doing their best. I mean, we've already started to see things like you mentioned, the inactivity fees. Credit card companies are starting to issue more variable rate cards. So right now, your interest rate is usually given to you as a number, you know, 15%, 18%. In the future, I think we'll see more cards that say prime rate plus 3% or whatever the prime rate is plus 10%, depending on how good the card is. And already, credit card companies are using tricks and traps to fudge the line of what they get to count as the prime rate that you're adding your 3% or your 10% to. So yes, these revenue, if the bill works, revenue should go down a little bit because people are paying more on credit cards than I think they want to in the long run. The market's not working in that sense. But on the other hand, issuers are aggressively trying to make new ways of getting people into paying more than they expect to pay, which again is why I think we really need an agency that's on top of this and can better keep up with credit card companies.
Let's take a call from Vince in Manitowoc next. Vince, thanks for holding.
Hello. The question I have, actually I have two, but the primary question is it worth opening a new credit card to get the take advantage of the freebies, like some of the companies now are offering free airline tickets anywhere and yada yada?
Usually not. The way to remember, you know, it's the old saying, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. They wouldn't be offering the free airline cards if they hadn't calculated out ahead of time the X number of people were going to intend to use the free airline tickets and to close the card after that, but we're going to fail to do so, and we're going to end up paying some other kind of fee that they didn't know about. They wouldn't be offering the airline ticket if it really was a good deal. Sometimes those deals can work if you're willing to put in a huge amount of work into understanding the contract, which, as we discussed before, is really difficult, and to making sure you stay on top of every single provision that could end up resulting in you charged a fee. But that's very difficult to do, and very few people do it, which is why they offer those freebies in the first place.
Vince, you had a second question?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Is it my understanding then that if you pay the full balance, every month, will it be an advantage?
Paying your full balance every month is always an advantage in terms of not running interest rates. I mean, credit cards, as our previous caller, I believe Scott was his name, was explaining, is the credit cards are actually a good deal if you are able to pay your balance every month and you are absolutely 100% sure you are able to pay your balance every month, and especially if you do set up the system like he did, where you have your balance withdrawn from your bank account automatically, then you can continue to use frequent flyer miles and that kind of thing. But that system is really hard to do, and you have to always be on top of it. And many people start off trying to be that kind of credit card user, but instead end up missing a payment occasionally, and that's when you end up paying it all back. Because if it weren't for the frequent flyer miles, you could just do all of this stuff on debit cards. And one of the things that I hope will come out of this bill is some changes to get more people who aren't using the credit card as a credit card, are just using it as a payment card, that they should be shifting over to debit cards, as we see in many other countries.
We're talking about new credit card regulations in the new year and wondering what you think. Thank Vince in Manitowoc for his call. We've got some other people on the line who want to talk about this as well. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have more with our guest and with you. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. There'll be a line opening shortly. And if you do get a busy signal, please feel free to send an email to talk@wpr.org. My guest is Angela Litwin, assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin School of Law. And we're talking about credit card regulations. What questions do you have about the new rules? Do you understand what your rights are? If you've got a question about that, please feel free to call that in as well. We're even going to talk about, we have one caller who couldn't hang on, but was talking about identity theft. Had never had a credit card in his life, but somebody opened one in his name, and now his credit score is lousy, things like that. So it's all fair game. 800-642-1234 or talk@wpr.org. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Kathleen, we'll be back tomorrow. Well, you just heard Larry Mueller talking about what's coming up next hour, but after Larry Mueller, on Chapter a Day, Susan Sweeney begins a new selection, Eat, Pray, Love, One Woman's Search for Everything Across Italy, India, and Indonesia, by Elizabeth Gilbert. That coming up on Chapter a Day at 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the new rules for credit card companies that are going into effect in 2010. Congress passed and the president signed into law the Credit Card Accountability, Responsibility, and Disclosure Act of 2009. We've been discussing the ramifications of new credit card regulations with Angela Litwin, assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin School of Law, a nationally recognized expert on banking law, and with our callers as well. We just heard from Vince in Manitowoc. Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Joan in Rhinelander. Joan, good morning.
Good morning. Very interesting show. I have heard that if I cancel one of my credit cards, my credit score will be affected by that, and I do pay my credit cards now, so I've never have any fee. But if they add an additional annual fee onto any of my credit cards, I would want to cancel it. How is that going to affect my credit score?
It's unclear. There are some people who are predicting that when you cancel your credit card. So canceling is a new right that comes into effect in the law. That they, if they're going to, credit card companies are going to change their terms, now they can just change their terms. They have to give you 15 days notice, but it's very easy to do. And the changes will apply retroactively, right? So they, annual fees don't happen. But if they change your interest rate, they can change the interest rate on the amount you already owe them, not just on the amount you're charging in the future. And so under the new law, you'll have the option to cancel your credit card and be allowed to pay down the existing balance in a reasonable way rather than having them demand complete payment of the balance now. Some people are predicting that canceling the card will affect your credit limit. I mean, will affect your credit reporting, your credit rating. I'm not sure how that's going to play out. That's one of those things that we'll start to see as the credit agencies deal with it. I'm hoping, because it shouldn't affect your credit rating, right? It shows actually that you're being a responsible consumer rather than an irresponsible consumer, so it should actually decrease your credit riskiness. I'm hoping that if we, for example, get a Consumer Financial Protection Agency, that that's the type of thing that a new agency will be able to deal with as changes come about. Because, again, the history of consumer credit regulation has been one of unintended consequences, and that could very well be something that's an unintended consequence of the current law.
Well, we could do a whole show on credit scores and what affects them, but perhaps there needs to be some rules about who can look at credit scores, because every time someone checks your credit, which happens now, if you want to get homeowners insurance, you get a credit check. Auto insurance, you get a credit check. Well, every time someone does that, your credit score goes down. And you don't. There's nothing you can do about it. Auto insurance is mandatory in a lot of states. So,
right.
You know, and that's just
Trying
one
for a
example.
Job that gives you a credit card check.
If you go to rent an apartment or something, your credit there's a credit check, and all of these things negatively affect your credit score. And so, you know, people are concerned about this. Note to producers. Maybe there's a future show in that.
I would agree definitely.
Maybe you could come back and talk about that some more with us. Well, good. Let's talk to Joan in Waukesha next.
Hi. My question regards the checks that are often always actually included in my statements from my credit cards. I'm sure they want me to do a cash advance through those checks. I just wonder, is there any way to get them to stop sending them? And how much of a risk are they in terms of identity theft?
Currently, no. There's not a way to get them to stop sending them. You can try calling them up and ask them not to send them to you, but your odds of success on that one are low. In terms of identity theft, we actually don't hear a lot about thieves going through the mail and finding those checks and cashing them. I think maybe that's because a lot of identity theft these days has moved into the digital realm, and that's where it's easier to do more harm or to make more illegal money with less effort. So we don't hear a lot about those checks being cashed by thieves. But in terms of getting rid of the temptation for yourself, it's very difficult to get your issuer to stop sending those. That is the kind of thing that I was talking about when we were talking about my study earlier. That's exactly the kind of thing that people want to be able to have control over, to not have those kinds of temptations arrive in their mailbox on a regular basis. And as I said before, the law addresses some of those kinds of temptations, but the checks in the mail is a great example of one that it does not address.
And those, probably for most people need to go right into the shredder. One of the things that's been true in the past, and I hope is still true, is that it's always been, well, I don't know about always, but I discovered several years ago that I could opt out of all of these mailings that I was getting, solicitations from credit card companies, and that's still true. People can still do that, right? They can get themselves on a list saying, I don't want to get any more of these fantastic offers for credit cards.
It's true, but you cannot completely get rid of them. So what you can do is if you go to the website or if you call, I used to have the number memorized, but I think it's something like 888 opt out, something like that, opt out 5. But if you go to the opt out website, you can opt out, but only of credit card offers that you have no affiliation with the company. So random credit card and they can still send you offers, but what they cannot do is they cannot send you personalized offers that are based on your credit card profile. So basically, when you sign up for the opt-out system, what you're doing is prohibiting them from accessing your credit report with and sending you a pre-approved offer based on that. They can still send you an offer of any sort that's not based on your credit score, although they have much less incentive to do that because it's hard for them to target the right amount. But what they really can still do is any of the affiliates of companies you already work with, and affiliates is defined very broadly, any of them can continue to access your credit score and can continue to send you offers based on it. If you sign up for the opt-out line or for the opt-out system, you will get a major decrease in the number of credit card offers, but it's impossible to get rid of them altogether.
Let's see. Diane in Janesville, you're next. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
You spoke just briefly before your last break about the European trend of going towards debit cards or payment-only credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been enjoying very much the last 15 years of not having a credit card and have been using my debit card kind of sort of like a credit card.
Yeah.
And it's worked out quite well for me.
I think that's the way to go. The one risk you run with debit cards is that we have different laws about identity theft. So on your credit card, if somebody steals it and, you know, charges up a bunch of airline tickets, and you can only be held liable for a total of $50 of that, whereas on a debit card, they really can drain your entire account, and you would be held liable for the entire thing. That's an inequity that I think absolutely needs to change, and then more people will be able to do what you're doing successfully. You don't need a credit card if you're not planning on running a balance. A debit card should do everything you need it to do. But I think having that difference in the law makes debit cards slightly less advantageous and motivates a lot of people to stay on credit cards when debit cards would actually be a better and a cheaper option in the long run. Debit card transactions cost less to process for merchants than credit card transactions do.
There are some limitations, though, on debit cards. I mean, I've run into a couple of things trying to use my debit card for something I would have used a credit card for. And particularly if you go to a hotel and you use your debit card to cover incidentals, you know, they can slap a pretty hefty charge on your card and it might take 10 days for the charge to come off. Whereas
yeah.
That doesn't seem to happen with a credit card.
Right. That doesn't happen with a credit card, right? Because they know they can count on the issuer to pay the bill, even if they can't count on you to not drain your account. Yeah, and you're exactly right. I think there's other changes that need to happen with debit cards, and they do that at gas stations as well, right? When you put in that I'm going to use my debit card and I want to just fill up my entire tank, and it doesn't know how much money you're going to spend, they put a large hold on your account and they don't release it right away. So there need to be changes in requirements about releasing those kinds of holds more quickly as well. But again, there's no reason in theory why people shouldn't be using debit cards. There's just some changes that need to happen to the regulatory structure of debit cards to put them on par with credit cards.
Let's take a call next from Leslie in Rhinelander.
Hi,
Leslie, good morning.
This is interesting. I just caught part of what you're talking about. And it also has to do with, I use my credit cards a lot traveling overseas to Asia and into the Middle East. And what you're talking about with the rates and everything, and I've gone months at a time, like 3 or 4 months at a time. And with the question that I have, two questions I have is, and maybe suggestions, because I'm about to take off in another 2 months and I'll be gone for 4 or 5 months. Some of them are in major cities that I'm going, and some are in some pretty remote areas. And I find the credit cards have helped. But with all these changes, and I did get clobbered by missing one payment and didn't even know it, even though my credit score is good, is what would you recommend if you're going to be overseas for, let's say, you know, 2, 3, or 4 months at a time, and it's really your only source of money that you can use while you're over there? Would you recommend debit cards? And are there different kinds of debit cards that you can get that would allow you to, you know, to use literally thousands of dollars, you know, worth of expenses while you're over there, or the old-fashioned traveler's checks?
Yeah, I mean, I can't give you specific advice on that. What my general advice would be is to read the terms of everything very, very carefully. And that if some kind of deal that they're saying will give you this much money up front and that kind of thing seems too good to be true, it probably is. So I think the main thing is with all of those types of things, right, traveler's checks, we all know how they work. There aren't really hidden fees in them, and so they're a safe bet in that sense. With credit cards and with using your debit card for that type of thing, you just have to be careful to make sure you understand the terms of your agreement ahead of time. And doing things like you were saying where you accidentally missed a payment, that can, you know, get you clobbered with fees and changes in interest rates. And so I don't know what kind of internet access you have and that kind of thing, but I imagine you want to have a lot of stuff set up to pay automatically to make sure you don't get trapped into that again.
Thanks for that call, and we're just about out of time. We're in the last minute of the program here. One of our callers who had a question for us, he was curious as to why it always took so long between the time a regulation is promulgated and it goes into effect. I mean, why when the original, I forget which agency it was, said, well, we're going to change these laws, and then Congress passed a law. Why is there such a big gap between the enactment of the law and its actual effect?
That's a great question. The reason usually given is that credit card issuers need to change their software and they need to update their programs and be able to change their systems. And there's some truth to that, although we're seeing that by the fact that they're making changes preemptively ahead of the law, that they are capable of making changes faster than the law is going into effect. I think the real reason is to just make the law slightly more palatable to them and therefore make it more more feasible to get passed. So I think it just has to do with the dynamics of power on Capitol Hill when things are being passed, that it's that's something that is a big strike in favor of the companies having those kinds of delays in implementation.
Thank you so much for spending this time with us today. I understand you're on vacation, and we'll let you get back to it. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Angela Litwin is assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin School of Law, nationally recognized expert on banking law. We hope to have her back on again because this is a subject that always gets a lot of discussion. Rob Fair produced this program, and I thank him for that. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. It's the Ideas Network.